Station. This is side number three of the tape number three of the trip, our trip to Blue Water in September of 1976. I've been telling about our scout trips many years ago. When we went camping with the scouts, sometimes we camped where roads were and sometimes we didn't. This one particular time we went, decided to camp on top of a rather steep hill. There was no road up to it. And we had made an old strip down DeSoto with a frame into like a semi-trailer and used as a scout vehicle. And inasmuch as the old car wouldn't pull up this steep hill, we had disconnected the semi-trailer, and the boys had pushed the old car right up the hill. Then we went back down and got the semi-trailer, and we practically carried it up the hill. But at last, we all got up this steep hill, put the old car back together, and we spent a couple of days there. We had quite a good time. Another time we went up in the mountains, and after we'd got up in the where we call Pole Canyon area, close to Bear Springs, when we camped there, it was fairly pleasant weather. And but after the first night, it started to snow a little bit. We didn't get much snow that night. The boys were divided into two patrols. One patrol was camped downstream from me, and the other patrol was camped upstream from me. I had made my tent and camped right in a narrow spot between two of the steep cliffs. The general idea was to keep the boys from playing tricks on each other. It had been a common practice for the boys to play tricks. One patrol on another patrol. And of course, when one patrol played a trick on the other patrol, it was their honor to go play some return trick. So this particular night, or on this particular camping trip, we had selected this place, and I had put my tent right square in the middle so that it would be difficult for the boys to sneak past me to go raid the other camp. The first night passed very peaceful. And Eldon's patrol with Neil Chapman and two or three other boys, I don't recall who was in the patrol, was camped downstream from me. And Neil had a great big old dog that was very friendly. The dog did not like cold water, though, and the other patrol had a tendency to throw the dog in the creek. And the big joke about that was that the old dog, after he got thrown in the creek, he'd run over to Neil and climb on Neil, try to get sympathy. Especially if Neil was laying down or something like that, the dog would get right in the, beside him and try to get warm. And the rest of the boys would just giggle and laugh about that. They had a big time. So I had Neil tie his old dog up so that the dog couldn't be thrown in the creek. We spent a comfortable first night. The patrol on the north side of us had camped under a great big old pine tree. And it was an ideal camping spot because the snow did not come through the tree boughs and they were perfectly dry underneath. They had a great big old tarp that they spread over the top of them, but that mainly was to keep them warm. They'd stretch the tarp out, which was about, I guess, 15 foot square, and they'd lay it out flat and lay their sleeping bags or quilts down, and then they'd fold the tarp back up over the top, and this made a very warm and comfortable bed. And this, the second night we was there, it had snowed all day long. There was quite a lot of snow on the trees. The camp south of me didn't have near the warmth. They had camped up against the side of the cliff, and they got a little protection from the cliff, but nothing like that big tree to protect them. The guys under the tree built a little larger fire than necessary so they could sit around and tell stories. The fire, the heat from the fire came up through the big old tree. And later on in the night, after everybody had gone to sleep and everything was quieted down, the snow in the tree above the fire had melted. The snow on the edge of the tree, away from the warmth of the fire, had been too froze to the tree to slip off, so it kind of trapped this loose snow. And all at once, the loose snow was able to fall down among the branches and come down and land right on top of the guys that were sleeping in, under this big old tarp. Of course, they felt the weight of the snow come down, and they poked their heads out from under the tarp, and sure enough, there's snow all over the bed. And their first thought was that the other patrol had sneaked past me and got up there and throwed snow on their bed. And so then they got busy. They went quite a ways out of the way to make a great big old round circle around my camp and snuck in on the camp on the south end. And they got old Neil's dog and untied it and took it over and throwed it in the ditch or in the creek very quietly. And then they went back to their camp. Well, meanwhile, Neil's old dog, getting all good and soaking wet and wanting comfort, well, he went and climbed in the sleeping bag with Neil. And Neil and Eldon were sleeping together that night. The next thing they realized was right in between them was a big old wet dog, just as wet as they could be. And it routed everybody out. I came out of it. And we had a big row there for a little while. Who had thrown the old dog in the... So the first patrol informed me that the second patrol, or the south patrol, had came over and thrown snow on their beds. And the south patrol insisted they were innocent. They hadn't thrown snow on anybody's bed. After a bit of reasoning and everything, we finally decided where the snow had came from. But Eldon and old Neil had to sit up all night by a big fire drying out their sleeping bag and getting the old dog quieted down. On the way back on this particular trip, it was kind of slippery and sliding as we went down the road towards Blue Water. Going around one of the curves, the old muddy road, the semi-trailer kind of slipped to one side. Of course, the boys got a great big kick out of this. They enjoyed it. When the trailer would skid around, they'd yell and hoop it up and really have a big time. But one time, the trailer slid a little bit too hard and the wheel hit the side of the embankment, and it broke a well that I had made to hold the wheel straight. This allowed the wheel, it was a front axle that we'd used for the semi-trailer, and this allowed that wheel to turn one way and the other way. So we stopped, and we got an old oak stick, and we stuck it down right next to the wheel, and Warren Child sat on the back end of the trailer, and he used this wooden stick to guide that trailer on down the hills on into Blue Water. After that, we got a different type of axle put under there. It wasn't near as bad. I have neglected to tell you that we named this old strip down in the semi as She Has To. We said that she has to be pushed, and she has to be pulled, she has to have gas and oil. In fact, just plain she has to have everything. And we drove that thing for a long time. About 9 years previous to these little experiences I've been telling you about with our old She Has To car, Junior Titchen and I, well, I succeeded in getting a hold of an old Overland, about a 1919 Overland. And it didn't have any seats or anything else on it. So Junior Titchen and I, we worked on it, and we fixed the tires, and we put a headlight. We had originally intended to put two headlights on it, but we found that our battery wasn't strong enough. We hook up two headlights. There wasn't electricity enough to run the car, and it wouldn't run, so we could only use one headlight. We had a board for the driver to sit on and his passenger, and then we nailed some boards up for backrest. And then on the back, we put some more boards for the kind of a pickup style load. Junior Tetchen and I drove this old car quite a number of places. It would go, seemed like miles and miles on 1 gallon of gasoline. We went up to Blue Water Canyon any number of times, and we went other places. One time, there's about five or six of us kids on it, went Blue Water Canyon, went swimming. And on the way back from Blue Water Canyon, we found some little skunks. Well, we stopped to catch the skunks, and all of them got away except one. And we caught one little skunk. And old Malvy Wetton was sitting in the back of this little pickup deal, a wooden box that we had nailed there. And he held the skunk by its tail so that it wouldn't stink us up. Now, I don't know why we were taking it on down to Blue Water, but anyway, we had 2.5 miles to get to Blue Water. And Malvy's kneeled down in this little old wooden bed, holding this skunk up, looking forward. And we were just about to Blue Water when something, we hit a bump or something, and Malvy almost lost his balance. And the little skunk swayed up and was able to get his front paws on the board that we had made for the backrest. And immediately the little skunk squirted two or three of them in the back. It didn't squirt us very much, but he got a little bit of stink on us. So we immediately throwed the little skunk out in the weeds, and we done everything we knew of to get rid of the stink. However, we had to turn around and go back up the canyon and go swimming and get some new clothes. Even that didn't help matters very much. Another time, the Navajos up to the Mount Haystack were having a Yabichai or some celebration. I don't quite recall. Somebody, it wasn't a celebration, but anyway, somebody was sick. Was it a marriage?
Yeah, wedding.
And Grandpa and Grandma Young were invited to the marriage ceremony. We left out early in the morning from Blue Water on this old overland jitney that we had. June and I sat in front. Grandpa and Grandma Young sat in this dadgone little pickup bed we had on it. And the way we went up there, of course, in the daytime, the generator generated enough electricity to keep the coil and the spark of the car going. It didn't have enough juice in the battery to run a starter, but we were able to crank it, or sometimes we pushed it. The engine wasn't too good, and we had to really get the engine turned over fast in order to make it run. So normally we'd push the thing, and it wasn't hard to push it. Two of us could push, and one let out the clutch, and it'd start quite easy. And we made it out to Haystack very well. We got out there, and the Indians were in the hogan. They had their sing, and they were a yai, 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 and Grandpa and Grandma went into the sing, sat in the hogan with the group. They got a box for Grandma to sit on. Dad sat on the ground with his legs folded like the Indians were. And June and I went in for a little while. I guess we went in for about an hour. But we found it very, well, we just didn't find it interesting at all.
You couldn't talk to each other.
No, no one could talk to each other. Just the medicine man was chanting his chants. It was Navajo language, and we didn't understand one thing that was going on. So the first break that came along, Junior Titchen and I, we went out. But Grandpa and Grandma Young, they stayed in, because that was an honor to the couple of being married. Well, about midnight, the sing was over with, and the couple was married. And Grandma and Grandpa Young came a-staggering out. They held their backs like they were old, old people. Well, they were quite old at that time, but anyway, they were definitely stiff. Grandpa had sat on the ground there for about 6 hours, and Grandma had sat on that old box until she was as stiff and sore she couldn't hardly move. And where we had parked the old jitney was very sandy. And when Grandpa and I tried to push it, we couldn't push it. Junior got off, try to help us push, and he couldn't push it either. And the Indians kind of looked at us and laughed a little bit. Then a signal was given, and
Grandma.
Well, I guess, okay, Grandma Young talked to them a little bit. And they, she told us all to get on the old jitney, and a whole bunch of navvies came over, and they pushed us. Boy, it got started in a big hurry. And we were just halfway home. As long as we kept the engine revved up, we had enough electricity in the battery to run the lights and the ignition. And we were halfway home. We were out by Sam Lewis's lake going over a Malapai ditch. And I killed the engine. We had no lights or nothing else. You couldn't see a thing. We tried pushing the old car to get it started again, but about the time it started, we'd be off the road, and we'd have to stop and get it back on the road, and then we'd push a little bit. And finally, when Grandpa and Grandma, they decided they'd walk on home and get a horse and come and pull us on in. So they walked the 2 miles on down to the house. Got an old Bolly, that's the horse's name, and walked back. Grandma and Grandpa both came back, and they hooked on the old car, and they pulled it until it got daylight. Then when it got daylight, well, we got it started again, and Junior and I rode on home. Grandpa and Grandma and the old Bolly came a-walking on in, just about a half hour after daylight that morning. But anyway, Grandma Young said that she sat on this old wood box that we had on the back there, and it bounced up and down, jarred around. It scratched skin several places on her back, made her sore, have sores all over. Not only was she stiff from sitting in the abajai, but she was stiff from having these boards, skin, pieces of skin off in her back and sides as we went bouncing along. Whereas Junior and I had a wonderful time going in this old thing. It wasn't so easy on the old folks. Stories in Blue Water wouldn't be complete if we didn't tell you about Susie and Chris and some of the happenings that took place in their lifetime. And Uncle Chris's story started out here, as far as I knew, out in Chino Valley, Arizona. And right now we're passing through Chino Valley. And Ike Rogers had some property in a ranch out here in Chino, Arizona. Brother Knutson was out in this area because of the fact that he worked on the Santa Fe Railroad. He was on the construction gang, and they were making, widening the road bed out. Up till that time, they just had a narrow one-way railroad, the Santa Fe Railroad. And it went up the hills and down, and the track weaved back and forth, and so it was a very bad track. So the Santa Fe had decided they'd improve their railroad. And they had quite a large construction crew with some horses and scrapers by the dozens. And Chris Knutson was one of these men that worked on this construction crew. Well, as they went along these different little farming communities, well, the railroad construction crews, they learned to mingle with the people. Now, there was quite a bit of conflict there. Some of the older people or the adults were happy to have the railroad group in there because they realized that they'd have better railroad transportation, be closer to the other cities or towns because of a better railroad. The businessmen were happy because they could sell all of their crops and produce for cash. They got cash right on the spot for anything they could produce, and they got a good price for their products. So it brought prosperity to the little communities. And the girls were happy because where they might have been two girls to one boy in a community, they suddenly found out there was about five or six men for each girl. And at the little dances that they had at the communities, well, the girls never even got the start for their seats. They just, as soon as one guy got through dancing with them, well, another guy'd come along and dance with them. But the young men of the community, they weren't very happy. They didn't like this competition. And so there was always a great deal of argument whether they should let these railroad construction people come to the dances or not. And Isaac Rogers had a daughter. She was a fairly good-looking girl, but I guess not as good-looking as the other girls because she wasn't as popular as the other girls were in the little community. Isaac also had several sons, And they were among the group that didn't like the railroad fellows. So we had one family with a girl that was real happy with the situation and the boys that were very unhappy about the whole thing in general. Well, Chris Knutson did not belong to the Mormon Church, whereas the Rogers were very good Mormons. And he started courting the Roger girl. And of course, the boys, they fought it all the time. They fought it on the principle that Chris Knutson wasn't a Mormon and their sister was only to marry a good Mormon and all this sort of stuff. And so it made kind of conflict in the family. And the father had told the girl that he didn't like the idea of her going with a non-Mormon, that she ought to pick a nice Mormon boy. But inasmuch as the girl considered Chris as the only one that paid her any attention, she was willing to stick it out with Chris. And even though Chris was told not to come around the Rogers place, well, the Roger girl would sneak out and meet him at scheduled places. He'd come in after work at night and they'd meet out side street somewhere. And then at dances, I believe, is where they plotted where they was going to meet. Well, as the railroad progressed, the construction gang moved on over into Flagstaff, Arizona, and then down towards Holbrook, Arizona. And so the Roger girl couldn't communicate with Chris as easy anymore. Chris found it almost impossible to get back to the Saturday night dances, and so he started writing letters. But the Roger boys would intercept the mail, and sometimes they'd give the sister the letter, and sometimes they wouldn't. And so Roger girl and Chris Knutson finally made an agreement that they would send the letters in care of a post office box. And there she went and got her mail at the post office box instead of having it delivered to the regular Roger family box. Some way or another, the boys found out about this. And the letter arrived from Chris saying that he wanted to marry the Roger girl. And he said, "Now I'll arrive there Saturday morning after the work," because of the fact they had the weekends off. He said, "I will hide until evening and then I'll meet you out under the old apple tree and we'll get married." And the boys never did show the sister this letter. They hurried up and got one of the boys that could write quite a lot like his sister, and they composed a letter telling them Brother Knutson that they accepted Brother Knutson's proposal for marriage and that they'd meet him on this certain night out under the old apple tree. And so the time came that Chris was to meet the young lady out under the apple tree. And so he snuck over there, and sure enough, on the little bench below the apple tree was sitting a young lady or person in a big old white long dress with a big white bonnet over her face. Chris was certain it was his young lady lover. He went over and sat down beside her and started telling her nice things that young ladies like to hear. The young lady never said a word. She just sat there. And all at once, from all around, out jumped the Roger boys. And they grabbed old Brother Knutson and they tied his hands behind him. They put a blindfold on him, and then they throwed a rope over the branch of the old apple tree, and they tied the rope around Chris's neck, and some way or another, they got a board underneath him, and they kind of lifted the board up. They made him think they had really lifted it up high. And all at once, they janked the board out from under old Chris, but the rope broke, and he found himself standing in the middle of underneath the tree with this broken rope around his neck, and the boys each doing something else. Anyways, I guess some of them were up in the tree where the rope had been placed around, and he found that his hands could be freed by just pulling real hard on the rope, and he yanked the blindfold off in his face and took out through the bushes, and the Roger boys and the Roger girl never did see Chris Knutson again for a long number of years.
Apparently that girl was...
The young lady that Chris had made love to on the bench there was one of the younger Roger boys that had dressed up like the sister. And that was the reason he never answered Chris back or never said a thing. And so the brothers were able to get rid of Chris. Well, he went on over to Blue Water, and there was Susie Chapman. And Chris decided he liked Susie Chapman. Of course, Susie was like the Roger girl. She enjoyed having all this attention paid to her. The situation in Blue Water wasn't quite as bad as it was in Chino. There was nearly as many men there as there was boys. But anyway, Susie suddenly found that she had two young men that was interested in her. The other, the Mormon young man, or the one that had been in town, had no idea at all of getting married right at the present time. He was a cowboy, and he wanted to get $1 million before he, well, I shouldn't say $1 million, he wanted to get a cow herd before he got married. So he'd never proposed to Susie. But Chris Knutson, almost from the beginning, started proposing to Susie, and Susie said she wouldn't marry a non-Mormon. She only wanted to marry a Mormon. Well, Chris had never really intended to join the Mormon church. But by golly, the Roger group had caused him a lot of trouble on this same thing, and here was the trouble starting again. So old Chris joined the church, and he and Susie got married. And they lived in Blue Water there and raised a family and provided many hours of entertainment for the Blue Water people. The kids loved to tease him. They played all sorts of pranks on him, and Chris loved to play the concertina for dances. He played for many a dance in the old church house. And they'd have somebody play the cards on a piano or perhaps on a guitar, and Chris would play the melody with his concertina. And he could play just as hard as he could possibly play. In fact, he was so happy to be playing and having somebody listen to him that he forgot to stop one dance and start another. And he'd play until everybody on the floor was tired out and have to sit down. Then he'd stop playing, and they'd get new partners, and then they'd start a new set. Well, anyway, Chris liked to chew gum, and he had long whiskers. We called him Santa Claus. He'd had long whiskers, and he'd be chewing the gum, and he'd chew just the same beat as the music he was playing. Every time there was a beat in the music, well, his old chin would go up and down, making his whiskers go up and down. That was the way he beat time. And us young kids, we got a great kick out of watching Uncle Chris's whiskers go up and down as he played for the dances. But anyway, during World War II, well, Susie died. And so Chris suddenly found himself alone as far as his wife was concerned. Most of the boys had moved to Mesa, Arizona. And so inasmuch as Chris was alone and he was getting up in his 60s, well, the boys moved him to Mesa, Arizona, so that they could take care of the old gentleman. And when he was down there in Mesa, lo and behold, here was that Roger girl who had married another person and had turned out to be quite well-to-do. Now, Chris didn't hardly have a penny to his name, but the Roger girl had married into money, even though her family growed up, and they smoked pipes, and they smoked cigars, and everything like that. She had quite a bit of money. Well, Chris immediately started courting her, and they decided they'd get married. Now, this is up in their 60s.
Apparently, her husband died.
Oh, yeah, her husband had died years before, so she was a widow, and Chris was a widower. So they got married, and she had a lovely home down there in Phoenix. And after the marriage, Chris announced to his new bride that no longer would her children be allowed to come in their house and smoke their stinky old pipes or their old tobacco cigars. And the wife kind of agreed to that. She'd been raised as a Mormon, and she didn't like smoking anyway, so she agreed to this, that there'd be no more smoking in her house. Well, the older boy who smoked a stinky old cigar came in one day, and Chris went over and announced to him that inasmuch as the boy's mother and him was married,